It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a sign of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were guys, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out.
Welcome into the show. Hope everyone had a good weekend. If you spent time with your mother or you are a mother, hope you had a great weekend as well. I had an interesting one only because generally you send a gift to your mom if you are like me who's never in the state that she's in when it's Mother's Day. But you also have to make the call. It's a prerequisite. You understand you have to make the call. It can't be limited to a text. You make the call on Mother's Day to let her know that you're thinking of her, you love her, all the things you say to be a good child. It didn't work out for me yesterday, mostly because my mother left her phone out of place. So I called her twice. I sent her a text. I sent her a couple texts, and then someone in my family goes, "Oh, your mother left her phone with me." So okay. So I feel like I can't be blamed for not having a conversation because we're in a world of no landlines and she doesn't have one. She only has a cell, even though she's older, still only with the cell phone. And I can't be blamed for the no Mother's Day call. I tried. The evidence is there. Left the message, called again, sent a couple texts over, got nothing back.
I did my job. Two questions.
And the flowers are there too that I sent earlier.
Good job. One, you said you can't be blamed for not talking to your mom on Mother's Day. Who can you blame?
Sorry, I'm messing with the headphones. Can you repeat that?
Oh, I said you said that you can't blame.
I can't be blamed.
Yes. Who can be blamed then?
For me, I can't blame her. It's Mother's Day.
That's the interesting paradox we find ourselves in.
Yeah. She can't be blamed because it's her day and nothing she does on that day is her fault.
But also, you can't get
blamed. I can't be blamed either. Because she even has,
convenient.
You know, she has the ability to respond through, you know, a computer. She has an iPhone. She has a Mac. She can get a text. She can get the messages that way. So she has the ability to respond that way, too. It's just that in this case, she didn't. And I feel blameless. And she can't be blamed. We're going to blame technology. Even though all that happened was she left her phone in a spot she didn't have access to.
It's like the technology worked.
Yeah, I know because the message just went through. You know how I know the technology works? The person whose home she left the phone at responded on her phone. So I know the phone works. I know the phone works. So there that is. So yeah, mom's left her phone at someone's house, couldn't talk to her, but she got her flowers previous. And we'll see. She listens to the show, so maybe she's hearing this for the first time. Oh, she's hearing this for the first time. Maybe she now knows that I called her a couple times and she just wasn't available. It'd be like that sometimes. But shout out to all the mothers out there. Hope you had – if your kids are in town, hope you had a great time. And if your kids aren't in town, hopefully they were able to contact you and you could have had a nice conversation. Moving on to things that don't really involve what happened to me, the Astros win. It was a good weekend for the Astros. They take 2 out of 3 from the Tigers, which is what the standard of this show was. You take 2 out of 3, and that is a positive weekend. The middle, the sandwich game, not great. Christian Javier wasn't good, but you can also look at Hunter Brown and go, maybe long relief. And we talked about that. Throw Hunter Brown in long relief. He's not a guy you want to put in high leverage situations. He doesn't appear to handle a starting role well, but let him eat up some innings. And that's what he did on Saturday and did a good job. I think he got only one run given up in 5 innings. So I don't know if Hunter Brown's going to be the trash man, who's just, you know, it's garbage out there. Let's clean it up, Hunter. Pick up the garbage, clean it up, and don't leave it in another person's yard. I don't know if that's what he's going to be. But that's his role. But hey, if you don't want to burn the likes of Seth Martinez and others, and you can't do that to Bielak anymore because he's been DFA'd, to bring up Christian Javier, then maybe Hunter Brown's role is to just eat up innings in games that are blowouts, and maybe that's where he finds himself, and he becomes more important later on once he finds whatever it is that's been ailing him and fixes it. Of course, we got Verlander, who pitched really well yesterday. It's a bounce back from his previous start. He talked about it last time he was out there. He talked after the game about how he had to go back to and get to work. The Yankees figured him out. He discussed needing to be more deceptive, and he certainly talked about that after yesterday's start. We'll get to that, but it was nice to watch him go out there and put on a show. I mean, whether it was all about being in Detroit and facing lesser competition or just being back in a place where he's had a lot of success, he was good. The 7 innings, the 8 strikeouts. He did discuss being more deceptive, and he talked quite a bit about what he had to do to be better. But first, we'll hear from Justin Verlander in a little bit about his overall assessment, because he's an introspective dude, and that certainly probably comes with age. He's pitched for a long time. If you're looking for a guy who's gonna know all about his own game, that's one of those guys to go to. He's going to be pretty self-aware about his performance, and he was afterwards last week, and he was this week in a bounce back. So you've won, if we're playing small sample size theater, you've now won 3 out of 4, and you have the A's coming to town, an A's team who's kind of where the Tigers are. They're not great, they're not terrible, and you've got a shot despite playing home games, and we know what they look like at home, to build some momentum. And this isn't going to be a show who tells you, well, they're about to turn around, because I think we're tired of that. We're just going to say, let's watch the games, and we'll see what they are after we see them, after they win a couple or they lose a couple. Because despite maybe the good feelings when at winning 3 out of your last 4, it's still a small sample size, but certainly a larger one than 4 games. They're still 5-5 in the last 10. So 10 games ago, they were 10 games under 500, and they remain 10 games under 500. And I don't know how small the sample size is in baseball can be where you can start taking it seriously, as far as, hey, we'll do a stretch of 10 or a stretch of 20. But the stretch of 10, the stuff that shows up on or in the standings in baseball and basketball, the last 10, they've been 500. Certainly not good enough for where they are and what they have to accomplish. But they come home, and the road trip wasn't a disaster, and you'll take that. You'll take getting out of there, particularly how the road trip started with coming out even against a good baseball team and then one who's average. So you go 3-3 overall. It's better than what it could have been, better than what it looked like going in. And you got good performances at a Fromber and Justin Verlander. Sean, is that the first time that our big three, as far as the Astros pitching rotation, has been active at the same time? Because Fromber was, because Justin Verlander was hurt to start the, or out to start the year.
Yeah, yeah. And Fromber, I think, only made like 2 or 3 starts. And then
Christian Javier had to leave because of a neck issue. Is that the first time the big three, certainly it's the first time they've pitched in a series together.
Yes.
And I think it's the first time they've been active together at the same time. I think maybe there's some crossover, but as far as what you were looking at as your top three guys, I don't remember a time where they pitched in the same series.
Yeah, no, I mean, just off the top of my head, I think you're right. Also, Ronel Blanco is probably like big three.
Well, before the year,
it's just big meat.
Yeah, right? I know. Before the year, yes, it was a big three. Now Ronel Blanco's like, I'm Kendrick. I mean, and how Javier pitched, he's probably Jake. J. Cole. He's like, yeah, I'm stepping back out of this.
It's like if he just goes back on the IL.
Yeah.
He's like, actually, I'm still hurt.
Yeah, I mean, look, last couple fastballs were in the 89 to 90 range. It's not exactly what we're looking for, and neither was his performance as the Astros were. It was something very similar to what has gone on throughout the season, where the starting pitcher is non-competitive and you've got no shot. But it wasn't the entire weekend, and we'll thank Fromber for being good, and then Verlander for being great in their 2 outings to kind of save it. Yeah, so you're right. I should have started with Ronel Blanco, and then was like, oh yeah, and then these other three
that were good before this year.
Yeah, the tiers. What are the Astros pitching rotation tiers? Blanco, Fromber, and Verlander. I would still put Javier above Arrieta.
Probably still Javier, because I mean, if we're doing this the other day, I mean, we're talking about Justin Verlander completely differently. So yeah, I think you're allowed to have a bad start and still be...
still part of the... Yeah, that's true. And Javier before the neck and before coming back was good. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So maybe I don't drop Javier into a third tier by himself. I was being very disrespectful considering putting Spencer Arrighetti ahead of him. Hey, it's just one outing.
That was the disrespectful part. I'm okay with you putting him in his own tier by himself. It felt like you're like, oh, Spencer Arrighetti?
No. The Arrighetti Brown
in a mop-up
France role? Tier is one that I don't want to see anymore. Arrighetti pitched with the Skeeters. Excuse me, the Space Cowboys. Speaking of disrespectful, wow. The Space Cowboys. He pitched. Wasn't great, but hey, we know the excuse we can use. He was just working on stuff.
He's out there working on stuff.
So
he felt good.
How far away is Arrighetti from getting back into the rotation? What does it mean for Arrighetti? I'm not actually asking the question. I'm not looking for an answer. I don't care that much. I'm just saying.
those questions linger.
Those questions linger, and they will be asked at some point. And really, it's not even a question. Once Arrighetti, they deem him ready to go, Arrighetti will make his way out of the rotation.
I think Dana Brown before Arrighetti's start last week, last week before this weekend's Arrighetti start, Dana Brown said he expects 2 to 3 rehab starts for Arrighetti.
Okay,
so just a rough timetable.
Just put Arrighetti on the clock. Hey, buddy, your MLB dreams don't end. But you're gonna have a little of a pause as far as being in the rotation. You get a couple more. Get a couple more, and then it's time for you to go work on stuff. You can go work on stuff with the Space Cowboys, I guess, wherever they decide to send them. I mentioned Brandon Beal, like DFA'd. He didn't get the – I don't even know if he had the option. I'm not looking that deep into it, but he gets DFA'd to give Javier a roster spot. He doesn't get the Florida treatment. He is just no longer an Astro. I don't remember great Brandon Beal moments. I just know he was put out there a number of times to be the whipping – boy, not because he did anything wrong. It's just that they had no one else to go to. Chandler Rome brought some stats as far as Brandon Belak's final season with the Astros. He threw 146 pitches in a 7-day span, and 23 of them came in a game the Astros played with a 5-man bullpen because they mismanaged their roster. It can be a cruel business. So, you know, Belak's the guy who you have to go to because your roster isn't exactly built to deal with injuries to your starting pitching, or just simply a bad 7-8-9 as far as your options there. So he was the guy who suffered probably the most, and he's the guy now that pitchers are returning, kind of takes it on the chin. So we bid adieu to Brandon Belak. There will not be a Sarah McLachlan moment for him. I mean, Sean, I guess, can play the music now that I've said we aren't going to do it. He can be the guy who goes, actually, we will do it. But before we do that, maybe Sean will come back and honor Brandon Belak if he so chooses. We're going to hear from Verlander when we come back. And also, some big news for the Rockets, I think. We'll hear from, I say I think because what does it mean to have a pick that's in a bad draft? We'll hear from Rafael Stone about what the Rockets' plan might be, along with the Verlander stuff. When we come back,
ESPN 97.5.
Kane is in the building.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
You know, this is kind of what I touched on midweek. It's just like, you know, there's a benefit to having been through a lot of bad starts and not too successful times in your career. You have a lot of stuff to draw on from the past and know kind of what you need to do to fix it. And, you know, there was a few adjustments I made and, you know, you just never know until you step on the mound. So, being able to get a swing and miss on the fastball and, you know, from Riley Green there, the first batter of the game, and then see good results with it the rest of the game and see a lot of out front swings on the breaking ball there, you know, That's pitching. When everybody's on time for everything, you know you got to change some stuff.
Justin Verlander, after his start yesterday, great bounce back for him. It was ugly in Yankee Stadium. The first two games of that series were really ugly. Very different feeling coming out of the series against Detroit. You win 2 out of 3, you come home, you finish up the road trip strong, and you get two good outings from what we considered your big three. Javier, different story. The other news, at least the other good news that came from the weekend was the Rockets. The owner of the Nets pick, thanks to the James Harden trade, jump up to 3. The Rockets have the 3rd pick in the 2024 draft. Now, the draft, by anyone who has dived into these prospects, they'll tell you the draft isn't strong. It is a draft where I was listening to a podcast this morning, and the guy asked multiple GMs across the league about their feelings on the draft. One GM said it was as it's this draft is like if you started at 10, like the number one overall pick in the normal draft would be 10 in this draft. Now that feels like hyperbole. Another GM said 7 or 8.
So basically, the Atlanta Hawks won the 7th pick in the 2023 or 2022 yes. or pick a random year.
Yeah. Now the 2025 draft is supposed to be a really good one. Maybe headlined by Cooper Flagg. So the 2025 draft is a draft you want to jump up in. That's why you probably won't see a lot of teams trading their 2025 first round pick, particularly if they're an awful one, because that's a draft if you know you're going to be bad, you're going to try to tank for. But yeah, this one is not expected to provide a really franchise-changing player, at least not a lot of them. Maybe you get lucky. Maybe you find one, and that might happen in any draft. But as far as top-of-the-line talent that, we're at 3, that means we're going to get a great player. In fact, they put it this way in this same podcast. They said that you could not get, like, the 3rd best player in a starting lineup with the 1st overall pick. Like, if you were like, you know what, I'm going to trade you the number one overall pick, and you know who I want back? I want, let's use a good team, I want Aaron Gordon back. They'd say, well, the Nuggets would say no because they're a championship contender. He's part of their lineup. But even a team like, let's use, I don't want to use the Rockets because they're young. Let's use the Kings, for example. It was like, the fourth best player in the Kings rotation, or it's starting lineup could probably get traded for the 1st overall pick.
So Harrison Barnes.
Yeah. Harrison Barnes is the level of player. Terrence Mann is the level of player we're talking about as far as the number one overall pick is concerned. That might simply be hyperbole by GMs who haven't done all the deep dive that's going to be necessary. But that's what I heard on this podcast, which lets you know that the Rockets having a 3rd overall pick, it might be more difficult than you think to use a 3rd overall pick to go get a star. Because I think Lance tweeted when he saw it, package of 3 with I think he might have used a specific player, but a player and maybe another pick and go get your star. That might not be enough, considering the opinion on this draft. Now, we don't have to make the decisions. Rafael Stone has to make the decision. He has to determine the value of the 3rd overall pick and whether they're going to keep it or trade it and where the Rockets are in their rebuild. Here's Rafael Stone after winning the 3rd overall pick, he talks about the process the Rockets are going to go through to make a decision.
I think the caveat to it always was we'd be willing to move it if we got something that was worth us moving it, but at the same time valuing the player we think we'd bring in. So at least a slightly better chance that we'll like the player more at 3. Probably a much better chance that we'll like the player more at 3. Sometimes that's not true. A higher likelihood that we'll be very interested in a player at 3. That's probably the better way of saying it. But also potentially maybe others will too. And so maybe other teams will be more aggressive in trying to trade in for that.
How much time has Rafael Stone spent with Nick Caserio? Sean put it well, that at least in his comment when he put the audio in the rundown, that Rafael Stone really Caserio'd this, and he said really nothing. He went back on things he said like 15 seconds earlier. It was, I won't even call it a masterclass because we all could tell that he was like saying nothing, but it was very Caserio-like. And I'm going to say a lot of stuff that doesn't really add up to anything, and I'm doing it on purpose because I want to give you nothing.
Yeah, the funniest part is at the end where he's like, you know, there's a higher likelihood that we'll like someone at 3 than 9. Da-da-da-da. Actually, that's not true.
Yeah.
That's sometimes not true. Sometimes you like the guy at 9 more than you like the guy at 3. And then he goes, but, you know, maybe other teams will like a guy at 3, which is true. That's what helps, is that at the very – you at least have the possibility that one of these teams just falls in love with a guy at 3. And when it is a draft that's like this, like what this one looks to be, where there's not really any, like, AA-plus talents coming into it, like, there's no – obviously, it's going to be Victor Wembanyama and Scoot Henderson and Brandon Miller. Like last year, they had a top three.
A clear top three, yeah.
The year before with Banchero, Holmgren, and Jabari Smith. Yeah. Like, that was a clear top three. That basically, no matter – it was personal preference among the three, maybe, other than Banchero, really. And so, well,
even going into that day, we were hearing
we thought it was going to be Jabari number one.
Yeah, we thought that Banchero was going to be a rocket, and
yeah.
Then the betting odds started to change, and the news started to come out that the Magic were focusing on Banchero, and that's what happened.
And so, in a draft more like this one, where there's probably, I don't know, five guys in contention just to be the number one pick, just because none of them stand out so much on their own. There's not, again, like there's no one on the planet that would have gone ahead of Victor last year, or, you know, LeBron when he came out. There's not that player. So you have the opportunity for two guys to go in the top two, and then someone falls in love with who's available at three, and then that's how you can make a trade.
Speaking on the differences in strengths and drafts, I know a lot of people are crediting Rafael Stone because, you know what, he made the trade and they caught some luck, and now they're a top three pick. Now they have a top three pick, and what can they do with that? Do they want to pick? Do they want to use the pick in a trade, or actually pick a player? And right now, this is just one mock draft site. You're going to see a lot of them. This comes from NBADraft.net. Dalton Connect is the choice for the Rockets, according to NBADraft.net, their latest mock. And there are other places who have them picking different players, and that'll continue throughout. Now, in the praise of Rafael Stone beyond the trades, the talk was about the players he selected. Now, as part of the James Harden trade, a couple of players they've selected so far are Josh Christopher and Tari Eason. Josh Christopher, no longer a Rocket. That was a later pick in the first round. We also have Tari Eason, good player, just wasn't healthy this year, so we hope Tari comes back healthy and ready to contribute. But let's just stick with Rafael Stone's picks that were Rockets picks. You've got Jalen Green and Jabari Smith, both top four picks. I'll ask you, Sean, do you think those picks have lived, or at least those players have lived up to the spot in which they were taken? Because when you hear top three pick, and it's not always the case because, as you said, the relative strength of a draft, you think franchise changer, big time player, guy who was a building block. Do you believe either of those two have solidified themselves as building blocks? I see a lot of core six stuff that Rock fans are throwing out there about who they think their core six is. First of all, that's too many guys for your core. Yep. That's
literally nuts. You can't play them all at the same time.
Yeah, that's nuts. There's no such thing as a core six. Not in basketball.
One of them will always be on the bench.
Yeah. But back to the question.
Yeah, I don't think Jalen. I mean, that's pretty clear that he's not your classic number two overall pick, production-wise, at least so far. Jabari Smith, it's like a little bit closer with A, because he's the third pick, B, he's been better. And what he does is that he is like a great floor spacer, great defender, and playing him next to Şengün, like he makes playing Şengün work because he can kind of do some of the rim protection stuff. And then on the other end, he can space out when you have a center who can shoot a little bit, but he's not exactly like Dirk Nowitzki out there.
Yeah, I don't want to call a guy that young a role player, and that's not my thought. But you would at this point consider him a complimentary player to a best player.
He's like a Michael Porter Jr. or a Aaron Gordon type, where it's like, yeah, I can see what he does on a really good team where he is the third or fourth best player.
And you look at the rest of that draft, the guys who came after, maybe you think Keegan Murray is a better player. Jaden Ivey hasn't. It's in Detroit. I'm not going to blame anyone for what they do in Detroit. Obviously, if we could have redrafted Jalen Williams, the one of the two Jalen Williams, you would have taken first.
The one that barks like a dog.
Yeah, you would have taken Jalen Williams from Santa Clara, the wing for the Thunder before you take Jabari Smith. But as I just go through the list, you would say that Rafael Stone, maybe Keegan Murray and Jay, and definitely I think Jalen Williams, but maybe Keegan Murray. But Jalen Williams was never going to be taken at three.
Yeah, he was picked, what, 12. Number 12, yeah. And even that at the time was like, whoa.
Oh, people were surprised by it. Yeah. Yeah, so I can't blame – I'm not going to take a shot at Rafael Stone over that. You take the pick in that area, and the only conversation you're having about guys who could have gone in that spot, maybe you like Keegan Murray more. Maybe you think he's going to be a more dynamic shooter. He's maybe more of a movement shooter type of guy. But Jabari Smith has been a good player. But at three, I know a lot of people were hoping at the time Jabari Smith would be wrongfully were thinking he could be a franchise type guy. Who knows what he'll be going forward. And of course, the obvious one that jumps out as far as not living up to the potential is Jalen Green. And once again, that's not something you can criticize Rafael Stone for doing, because who else was he going to take there, I guess? Some people like Evan Mobley. Evan Mobley isn't the scorer that people hope he can be. He's only 22 years old, a defensive presence, but you already have that in Jabari Smith. And right now Jabari Smith has a more advanced offensive game than I think Evan Mobley does.
Could have had Scotty Barnes.
It's true. Scotty Barnes would have been an intriguing player here. He's probably like a super size Amen right now, a guy. People talking about Amen could be a big guy who can handle it on the wing, but Amen probably considered more of a true point guard, well, potential true point guard. Who knows what he'll play? Scotty Barnes, they try him as an initiator sometimes with Toronto. So he's a guy maybe that you would say Scotty Barnes is the guy you missed on.
Maybe. Even then, I mean, they still in that draft, they drafted Şengün, who might be the number one pick. If you're doing the redraft game, it might be Şengün. It's either Cade or Şengün, probably. And Cade, again, it's a lot of – he plays in Detroit.
Yeah,
so
how do you judge anyone who's been in that environment? What would he be like in a better spot? So, yeah, I can't actually just get after Rafael Stone on his picks. It may just simply be about the draft that those picks are made in. Now you find a Jim and Şengün, and just the other guys are in drafts where no one was going to be an all-timer. You just hope – that you would have been able to find one. And part of it is positioning. Paolo Banchero's probably going to be the best player in that draft. You didn't have an opportunity to take him, despite what we thought going into draft day. It's just how it fell. So he's picked good players. I don't think he's found a franchise player as of yet. Maybe Şengün is that. I think some people are ahead of themselves on what he can be. But Şengün definitely the closest to that. And we'll see what they do. I think a trade is a real possibility. I don't know if you can add another young player to the mix at this point.
Core seven?
See, this is the thing. I think if there was a core six, the core six won't stay together, because if they were core members, you'd have to pay them. So at some point, you're going to have to shrink the core to maybe like three or four.
Yeah.
And then that requires making a move and packaging the core, two of the core six plus a pick possibly, to acquire a star. That's what everyone's using the word star. And maybe you don't get a star. Maybe you just get a Mikal Bridges, who is a good player, but he ain't a star.
Yeah, and obviously the price on that one would be less than the Donovan Mitchell. Who I guess is just the only obviously available star on the market. Trey Young too, but let's be honest,
Does he fit what Ime wants? I guess we're talking about timelines too, because no matter how many core players you're trading, you're still going to have some young guys on this team. Are you trading for 30-plus year old Paul George? Does he fit the profile with this team?
That's where you get to the case of A, depends on the package, and B, he wouldn't be your first option. No. I'll put it like that. Where that to me seems like it's on the line of trade the pick. Like, I'm including the number three overall pick in this hypothetically.
Sure.
Where Stone does have to make the decision of like, well, do we want this French 19-year-old that's coming? Apparently, like, three of the top five or three of the top eight are French guys.
Yeah, it's comforting.
I don't know why. I don't know why that bothers me. I'm just like, come on.
No.
Enough. Enough with the French.
Enough of you. Enough of you guys.
And Rudy Gobert on my TV last night.
Yeah, he had a rough.
All the goodwill that he built up.
Already gone. Everyone, oh, look how great they were when he wasn't playing. And now 3-4. I will get into the NBA and what happened over the weekend, because a dramatic shift in what we think about some of these teams, and were they dead in the water, or maybe they're just the champions we thought they were. We'll talk about that. We'll get into some news regarding the Texans, and not really them, but we have word on the first game of the year, and it's one nationally televised game that the Texans won't be a part of. So we can wipe that one away from your thought process when you thought they might have four or five. Well, they won't have this one. We'll talk about that and more when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
The Houston Rockets at number three. Okay. Rafael Stone, their general manager, has always shown an inclination to be willing to trade out of his draft spot, you know, to bring in an impact veteran player. They have drafted well in Houston, and they've blended it with some good veterans. So I think there'll be a lot of conversations with Houston. I think that pick will be available.
That was Woj after the Rockets won the third overall pick in the NBA draft upcoming, thanks to the Nets being terrible and owning that pick. They still jumped up. The Nets were trying their damnedest not to make that a great pick because it was old to the Rockets. Didn't matter. Luck of the lottery or bad luck for them. This is the third top three pick the Nets have given to a team since 2016. Product of going all in, or thinking you're going all in, and at some point that bill comes due, and they paid for it. We'll see. I don't know if there's a Brown or Tatum-like player in this draft. There's some machinations that got the Sixers to trade out of that spot and not take Tatum, but the result of all the Nets trades were getting Tatum and Brown to the Celtics. So it's worked out well for the Celtics. We'll see if the Rockets can make a move similar to that, despite what we would consider a weak draft class. I mentioned this, and we're short on time because we went way long in the last segment, so we'll try to get back on time here. The first game of the NFL season, we now know it because the slow drip of leaks is a thing I guess we have to do. Sean and I discussed how dumb we thought that was last week. But, hey, let's try to build the hype leading up until, is it Thursday or is it Wednesday when the NFL schedule release comes out?
I thought it was Friday.
It might be Friday. Who knows? It just speaks to our lack of care about
how
it.
How can you know?
Well, I mean, it's been alleged that it's coming next week. I don't know if I've seen it from an official source that should know, but it's been alleged that it's coming like either the 15th or whatever.
May 16th.
May 15th, which is Wednesday. Seen that. Well, the Texans are not going to be playing the Chiefs on opening night. It'll be the Baltimore Ravens. The teams faced off in the AFC title game. We know the Chiefs won. They went on to win another Super Bowl. So the Ravens will get their shot at fake revenge when they see the Chiefs on opening night. The Chiefs lost last year to the Lions of all teams. Why that was decided to be the opening night game, I don't know. But the Lions turned out to be a good football team, so it all worked out. And it was a good game. We saw some of the Chiefs' wide receiver struggles very early, and it turned out because they have Patrick Mahomes, it didn't matter. So Ravens, Chiefs, and it makes sense. Just put, you got two big-name quarterbacks, the Super Bowl MVP versus the NFL MVP playing against each other. So, yes, we believe the Texans are a team that people care about. But I always thought, when you think about people talk about 4, 5, and 6, possibly, if you can include the holiday games, you know, they give, like, nationally televised games to the Bears, even when they stink. And now they have a top one pick, the quarterback I mean, maybe not generational after, you know, he paints his nails, so he can't be generational now.
Cried.
Yeah, and he cried to his mama after they lost to UCLA and didn't show up for a presser. Whatever, all the reasons you can hate on him.
That's why he's not a generational prospect, but Trevor Lawrence was.
Yes. Well, he did. Well, he won a national title.
Rings? Okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I can't hear your hate. I've got rings in my ear. There's a ringing in my ear because I can't hear your hate. I don't know the actual timeline. I don't know if he cried after the UCLA game or the Washington game. I just know he didn't show up to a presser and people were talking about how Drake May is a great team leader because he would never do that, I guess. Whatever.
Yeah, look at all those losses. He always shows up.
Yeah, he's used to it. Losing NC State by 3 scores, shows up to the after game presser. And we hear the news that Jerod Mayo says, Drake May has a lot of things to work on. And we'll see if that means anything in rookie minicamp or not. But, yeah, Ravens-Chiefs, that opens up the season. And it'll be on NBC. Speaking of NBC, it looks like they're going to get the NBA package, at least part of it. That deal appears to be done. So I don't know if we're going to get the John Tesh music back. But it looks like the NBA on NBC is back after, it's got to be what?
Like
20 plus years now. It's been a long time. And we'll see how they dole out the games, and is it going to be a Sunday night affair? Can't compete against the NFL in October, November, and December. So when will the special game be? I guess Saturday nights will be NBC's night maybe. So just some media news with that, and also, sorry, the Texans will have to wait till Sunday for their opening game. It's unfortunate for everyone, I guess.
And they still might be Sunday night football.
Yeah.
It still might be a primetime game. Might be Monday night because they do they still do the two Monday nights on week one?
Yeah, I got distracted by quietly taking shots at people ripping Caleb Williams. But my point was that they'll give the Bears like 3 nationally televised games for no other reason than they're in Chicago. So just consider the Giants are going to get a couple more than you think they should. We know
the Jets.
The Jets will. So there are plenty of nationally televised games to go around. But when we start to talk about, hey, how many games can the Texans get? Just realize you're going to be surprised by how many games teams who stink get, and then that might cut into yours because you know the Cowboys will get their 5-plus or whatever it might be.
Yeah, and we're all excited about the Texans, but we do have to think of the national – like these are nationally televised games. These are primetime games, and I'm just not sure if the national fan base is quite there for the Texans to be like – like you said, where the Bears can be terrible.
And they'll get at least a couple.
Where last year, literally last year, the Texans had 0, and then they got the Colts one moved to a Saturday night.
Because it decided the division.
Yes. That's what it took for the Texans to get
a winner-take-all game. Got at least a playoff get-in game, because at the time, the Jacksonville Jaguars could have won, and they would have won the division, but they tricked off and lost to the Titans because the aforementioned Trevor Lawrence, not generational, against the Titans when it mattered most. Yeah. Quarterback play in the AFC South, not great unless your name is C.J. Stroud, and we'll see what Anthony Richardson is when he's healthy. We'll wrap it up with that. Once again, I tried to keep that short and still went way longer than we should have. But you know what I'm happy to talk about, even if it does take me longer than it should? Aqueduct Plumbing Company. You can go to aqueductplumbingcompany.com. They're the best in the business when it comes to solidifying your home. And I say solidifying because water damage can screw with a lot of things in your home. And not only will it devalue your home, it'll just make it a miserable experience when you're just trying to hang out and chill. You don't want to come home and turn on the water and get dirty, disgusting water. You want the water to work. You want it to be clean. And you know how you make sure that happens? You go to Aqueduct Plumbing Company and do the repiping. The repiping is very important. They've done over 1,000 of those, so you know that they're experts. If your pipes are old or clogged or rusted, that makes that dirty water something you have to deal with, and that's what Aqueduct Plumbing Company is there for. If you just want a quote, you can go there too. You just call them, 281-488-6238, 281-488-6238. They provide the best free price quote in town. So not only are they going to check out your home for free and give you a quote, they're also going to provide experienced contractors that are local. You want local because local people care about the local customer. Billy Brown is a Clear Lake guy. He's from the area. He will take care of you and he'll provide that personal touch. Once again, go to aqueductplumbingcompany.com. That's aqueductplumbingcompany.com.
ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
See if I can stay true to my word and make this a quick segment to get us back on time. Something that happened over the weekend that I just found funny, and sometimes you're just feeling yourself and maybe thinking you can get away with something. What do you think Dan Quinn was thinking when he decided he was going to wear a Commander's unofficial shirt with the feathers coming out of the W? If you don't know the history, the Washington football team, which is what they were known for at some point, it's trying to get away from all Native American imagery because of, you know, lawsuits and people just looking down on the usage of things that don't particularly honor Native Americans. You guys know what they are called at one point. Not exactly a name that a lot of people think is complimentary. Well, Dan Quinn was like, you know what I'm going to do? Nah, I don't want that team issue gear. One of the local Washington, you know, we have people here in this town who make stuff for the Astros and Rockets that isn't official. Someone in Washington did it, and Dan Quinn was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to wear this at a press conference and see if anyone notices. Well, yeah, Dan, everyone noticed the feathers coming out of the back of the W, and the Commanders don't know why he did it. I guess they're going to talk to him about it and go, hey, you're new here. You're our new DC. Can you not wear stuff with feathers on it? It's something, particularly with new ownership, we want to get away from.
You said he's the new DC.
Yes. The head coach.
He's the new head
My fault.
Coach.
Yeah. I just think of Dan Quinn as a defensive coordinator at the time.
That's fair.
Yeah.
He's probably wearing a backwards fitted cap.
So. Maybe. Have to go look back at the picture. That's who he is. Yes. He's the new head coach. Thank you for correcting me on that. The new head coach has decided to wear.
Which also just underlines how little equity Dan Quinn probably has in that room, is that he's not exactly. It's not like it went out and hired Bill Belichick, all right? We hired Dan Quinn.
Yeah. No. Most known for blowing a big lead to Bill Belichick in a Super Bowl.
Yeah, Bill Belichick could, I mean, wear whatever he wants. If he wants to bring it back, sure, whatever. Dan Quinn doesn't get that leeway.
I'm looking
if I'm Washington ownership.
I'm looking at it. He's wearing a frontward facing hat. Maybe you wear a frontward facing hat when you are the head coach.
Maybe.
Can you wear a backwards hat on the sideline? We know Colin Cowherd thinks about it, but
definitely done it.
Has he? Well, did he wear a backwards hat as a Falcon head coach? I don't think so. I think not in an official game. I think he's always rocked the hat forward because that's head coach type stuff, at least when you're in front of cameras. But, yeah, you can find it. And the Commanders say they have no organizational comment on the matter. And the team didn't know he was doing it. I guess he just tried to see if people would notice, and people have. It's not officially licensed, so that's probably the Commander's biggest problem. Hey, stop giving promo to people who aren't paying us a licensing fee.
Yeah, we can't sell this in the team store.
No. You can just find it. Like, Dan, I don't know why. It's just, hey, I don't know who got it to him or why he tried it. Was he even aware that he had to know that that's not a shirt they wanted you to wear? Does he see feathers anywhere else all around the facility but on his shirt?
Could he have known? I mean, he could have just.
Someone had to send it to him, though. Someone sneak it into the pile? How did he get the shirt?
Just a different pile.
Or do you think the Commanders are pretending like they didn't know and they just gave it to him as a trial balloon?
It's like they're. I can't wait in 15 years when we talk about. Remember the different H that Houston, the Texans were
planning on
there
using,
and like giving out to people, but then also not selling, and then it ended up being a different H, which is the one that's on the helmet now. Is it one of those situations where they're just, hey, yeah, this is just one of the new things we got, not available in the team store, but. You know, if you know, you can get your hands on one. The flagship radio station for the Commanders. They can also get these T-shirts, but not officially for sale. Maybe that's the situation Dan Quinn found himself in, or he was just driving around and he saw someone in a parking lot with the back of his trunk open with a whole bunch of different T-shirts.
And he stopped. Dan Quinn just stopped. Hey, that looks great. I want one of those. How come we don't make these?
I'm the Commander's coach. I should get one.
Yeah, and of course, now the links are out. People can go buy the shirt if they want, which is, I think, the Commander's biggest issue. Hey, we sell stuff in a team store. We don't need people drifting over to this online market and buying shirts that we don't take a cut from.
Do you think new Commander's ownership is like, listen, that this stuff might have flew with the last guy, all right?
It's true.
Not us. Yeah. We're at least going to try to be a serious organization.
Look, I know you guys heard about that cheerleader thing, and, you know, we're just going to call it a thing. We're not going to really get into it. And, you
legally,
know,
we can't get into
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yes. Actually, there's a cease and desist. Also, you know, our owner really loved the previous name. He grew up as a fan, but hey, we're a business here. We understand what that name has meant to people, and we're trying to get away from it. So, no feathers, Dan. The W is fine. No feathers are out. I don't know if you've heard.
He's like, can I do moccasins then?
No, nothing. Your name is Dan Quinn. The answer is no to everything.
Bow and arrow?
No. No scalping, no bow and arrows, nothing. Whoa. I'm just giving Dan all the talking points. You don't get to do anything.
Can I coach with face paint on?
Nah, we saw what that happened to that Chiefs kid. No. No. Definitely not. Definitely not. Oh, hey, I know it goes down at Florida State. I know for whatever reason they get away with it. They can put a white kid in brown face and have him do the war chant and stuff on a horse, but not you. We're a professional organization. So Dan, he's not even going to be in hot water. It's just funny.
No,
my whole thing is, how did he get the shirt? Where did he get it from? Did he actually stop and buy it, or did someone send it to him in the mail? And he's like, you know what? I like this shirt. I'm going to put it on.
Yeah, I mean, he's been hired for 4 months now. He probably doesn't have like the full assortment of all the team gear that coaches wear, where they just have different versions of, you know, Washington Commanders football established, well, 1932, but then the Commanders were actually established in, like, 2022.
Yeah.
He doesn't have, like, all of that, where he has the windbreakers and the – do they do the shirts with the slogan on the back, or is that just, like, college football, where it's, like, some sort of slogan?
Oh, he's a former defensive coordinator. He's got to have a shirt with some slogan about – like being tough or something.
Yeah, relentless.
Yeah, and something like
it's
that.
R, E, and they all stand for something. Like,
yeah, it's an acronym for
R,
something.
Respect the game. Yeah. Like that kind of stuff.
E, energy. Stuff like that. Yeah. So nothing will happen to Dan Quinn. I just thought it funny that he decided on this or over the weekend he was going to wear a shirt unofficially licensed and do it and find one that had feathers on it and go, you know what, this looks cool. Let me try it out. And, of course, now the Commanders have to answer questions. And the questions will be, we didn't tell them to do it, and we'll have a conversation with them about it.
It does, you know.
Do you like the logo with the feathers?
I can see why Dan Quinn would be like.
I can see why Dan Quinn, what we know of him, would put that shirt on and go, I like it.
Well, also, like, their logo is just boring. So, yeah, give me a little something extra.
A little spice? Yeah. A little sizzle?
Just a little, yeah. Just throw a couple. Couple of Scovilles of hot sauce in there.
Yeah, it's not the last dab like on hot ones, but it's like the fourth wing.
Yeah,
in the video we're to the fourth wing.
It's,
yeah,
it's where the celebrity goes.
I feel it. Like the first they're like, oh, whatever, what is it? So then they start a little. Yeah, what's that? Oh yeah, that's what that was. If they're like a bow and arrow, then we've taken it to a different level. But Dan Quinn, shout out to you. Hopefully you keep that job and you can give us more. I just hope he just starts. He's got a hat now that we don't know where it came from. Dan Quinn, the new head coach of the Commanders. If you did not know that, I welcome you to the group because I just assume, hey, it's Dan Quinn. He's got to be a defensive coordinator, right? Who's hiring that guy as a head coach anymore? The Commanders are like, we are. So congratulations to them and their head coach for a slight controversy during, like, rookie mini camp of all things. This was supposed to be Jaden Daniels' weekend. Now it's about Dan Quinn. We'll continue to discuss the Astros. There's some numbers about everyone's favorite outfielder, maybe just utility outfielder, Jake Meyers. He's actually better than you think. So if you wanted to run Jake Meyers out of town, sorry, that designation goes to Brandon Belak. You can only run one of them out of town, and Belak's the one who got DFA'd. Hour one in the, ooh, almost said it, Sean. Damn it. Now it's in my head. Now it's in my head. We're through with hour one. Less smooth, but it's better than what I was going to say. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.